This is the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Jordan jumps in right now. And if you know Jordan, you know him. He's an ESPN insider. He does this great job with CJ McCollum on the Pull Up podcast. It's a must listen. You see him in the boardroom as well, Daily Wager. So he's a guy that has extensive knowledge, not of just basketball, of all sports, but especially basketball. He's my guy. So Jordan, first and foremost, happy holidays. Thanks for, I finally got you on, and this is the perfect time to do it. How you doing, man?
Alan, you're too kind, and that introduction is beyond special. So I appreciate the opportunity to come back on, and happy holidays to both of you as well.
All right, so let's go right out of the gate. You heard my take there on the Nets.
Yeah.
They are the team to beat. Don't even try to convince me about the Bucks. Don't convince me about, you know, well, Miami was in the final last year, or, you know, the Sixers now have a new coach and maybe things will be different. No. What I saw last night out of Kevin Durant told me that's the team to beat.
Yeah. So I totally agree. You're preaching to the choir. I've been trying to get as many people to buy into this theory or this notion that KD, you know, coming off the Achilles, it's not going to be an issue. You know, 18 months, and it looked like he looked completely fresh. And I there's a couple things that stood out. You know, the first quarter, they go for 40 points, almost 60%, and they combine for 27 points. So Kevin comes out early, and he's firing, he's confident, and clearly he felt like he wanted to make a statement like, you know, I'm back. And then you have Kyrie, who's the perfect guy for Nash, and likewise, because Nash says, here are the keys, Kyrie, you go ahead. I'm going to defer to you and let you run this team the way you need. And then you have all these shooters. You know, when you think about how comfortable that offense looked, and I know Golden State's not a barometer necessarily for championship success, but I think that's a competitive team, and obviously Steph is there. So I thought Brooklyn looked great, but also I don't know if it was surprising, but it was certainly – it stood out to me how comfortable both Kevin and Kyrie looked, and then some of the ancillary parts. I mean, bringing Karras off the bench, it's a 20-point score. Mm-hmm. You know, spreading the floor with Joe, they just looked like a – like they were firing on all cylinders already. So I'm really excited to see them get more and more comfortable.
And you know what? In a season like this with a short preseason, it is the team that looks like they're ready from day one. And the Lakers didn't look ready from day one. But the teams that are prepared and ready to go from the gate can jump out to that, to a big start that can propel them, obviously, this season. Right? Like, I feel the short preseason is going to affect some teams negatively, and some teams will take advantage of it, and the Nets might be one of those teams.
You're right. It's the same thing as the bubble, right? Like, Miami having this really good mix of veterans and young players coming together in the bubble. The short preseason is 100%. I totally agree with you. But also, like, you know, if you think about the East, and you mentioned Milwaukee, and, you know, it's Boston, you know, Toronto, Indiana will be competitive. Brooklyn, to me, because of Kevin and Kyrie and that friendship, that relationship first, that extends on the floor. And I don't know if Kyrie meant to be negative toward LeBron with those comments a couple months back, but they never had that type of friendship that Kevin has with Kyrie. And I think having that, as well as Steve Nash, who, you know, there are some similarities, right, between Nash and Kerr when they both took over. But Brooklyn does have a lot of pressure. And I think Nash coming in as an inexperienced head coach, but a very experienced basketball mind who understands how players think and operate, is a big plus for them.
Yeah, the Kerr parallel is actually pretty good because although Nash had a greater career than Kerr, right? Obviously, 2-time MVP. Their personalities are so similar because they're both pretty, they have that self-deprecating side to them. They're pretty understated personalities. They're not big, huge ego guys yet. They'll be good with the quick wit in the moment where you kind of just need, take the pressure off with a little joke or a quick little comment, and it kind of takes the pressure off the room. But yet, you put them in the crucible, they're fighters, both of them. I mean, they're highly competitive people.
Nasty, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, you'll see that smile quickly goes away, and both of them. I've seen Steve Kerr in the crucible. I mean, you've seen that look in his eye where he all of a sudden can get really aggressive, and Nash is the same way. So it's a great parallel between the two, and we'll see if he can have the same type of success that Steve had.
Steve punched out Michael Jordan. That's all you need to know about him. And Nash, you know, Nash was, if you talk to Amari or any of these good players around him, Sean Marion, they all said Steve Nash was an absolute warrior.
Yeah.
So I totally agree, and I'm really excited to see Brooklyn as they, you know, like I said, they're going to get better and better. That was just one game.
Yeah, it's pretty scary, but I just loved seeing KD moved the way he moved, Because normally, you know, you come off the Achilles. Now, I know it's been a really long, he got the extended time to recover. But that fear of, look at him, he's dragging a leg, or look at, like, he doesn't have the bounce, the pop isn't there anymore, like, whatever, something's missing, the jumper's off balance because he's favoring the other leg. Like, none of that was there. He looked like the exact same player before the injury, did he not?
He did, and the way I view it is not just the scoring, but to your point, the movement and the style of which he's able to score, the versatility. So, you know, how would he explode? How would he change speeds and explode to the basket? You know, how would he elevate? He had an and-one pull-up, you know, from 18 feet right in the first quarter. And as soon as he went into that hard right dribble where he just exploded up, I was like, he's back. I was hoping I would see that. I didn't know because Nash said, you know, he's about 90%. It's going to take him 15, 20 games. So it wasn't just the scoring. It was the freedom of movement, the explosion, changing speeds, and then just the comfort level of being on a basketball floor at this level without playing for 18 months. It's not easy to do.
No question about it. We're talking with Jordan Schultz. He's ESPN's, like, really every man. I mean, you call him insider, but he hosts. You see him on the boardroom. You see him doing podcasts. He's all over the place. A great talent and a great NBA mind. So when we talk about Nets, obviously it's that, okay, so when do they trade for James Harden, right? Like, when does that happen? Because that seemed to be an expectation. No, but that's what everybody's like, you know, when does that happen? When does that happen? Now, this story out today about the video that's circulating about Harden maskless in a strip club. They're supposed to play tonight against the Thunder, and now the league's looking into this. And I got to be honest with you, how do you possibly let him in that locker room? Like, you've got to test him not just one time, but maybe he's got to pass a couple of tests before you let him in the locker room. Do you think he did this on purpose because he didn't want to play, or is this just him being careless?
I think it's a combination of, like, I'm sick of this organization.
Yeah,
I don't want to be here, and also, you know, James Harden has his jersey retired in strip clubs. So, we need to be honest. You know, he's a polarizing guy. He's a great player. You could easily say he's a top five player in this league. He's a generational player. But, you know, this really is the story with Harden throughout his tenure. I think he's, you know, because of his talent, he's able to get away with so much because he's such a special talent. But at the same time, Alan, you know, I don't know how you bring him back into this locker room that's trying to get healthy. You know, they're trying. Houston wants to compete. They believe they can compete in the West. And whether or not you agree, that's why they made the John Wall trade to go out and get a guy that they believe in and is going to come back. And, you know, they obviously get Christian Wood. They spent money on him. They have a good roster. So I would be surprised if Houston makes a really big deal of this, like, long term. But I do believe that in the short term, in these next few days, you have to be really careful, because if you're trying to create a new, healthier locker room with a new head coach, the key is to stand up to your best player and the leader and the face of the organization. So having talked to some people within the organization, they believe it's going to be okay. But they're also, I think, being very careful, you know, in these next few days here as the season starts.
I thought it was interesting, too, that Adam Silver, when he talked to Stephen A, you know, when he was making the comments about the Harden stuff, you know, he did sort of make it sound like, hey, listen, when you sign a long-term contract, that's a responsibility that you have. You can't just, you know, start acting up and force your way out of places when you sign that contract. So I can't imagine. Sometimes, as you know, like, the league might get involved. Like, let's facilitate. Let's just make something happen so everybody's happy. This, you know, if when you're at the end of your contract, a team might be more motivated to move you because you're going to walk. He's not at the end of his contract. There's really no motivation to trade him other than he's miserable and you don't want to put up with it. So it's going to be awkward. It really is. And if if you cater to him, well, what stops any other player now for saying, well, I don't like it here either. Let me get out of here.
Exactly right. And that's why you have to stand up to James Harden. You know, very few people have. But also, like, the reason I've said they're probably not going to deal him, at least now, is because the asking price is so astronomically high. If you're a team like a Brooklyn or Philadelphia that you believe you can contend right now, there's no way you're going to mortgage your future with a young asset and a pick or multiple ones to get a guy in James Harden who you really don't know if it's going to be a great fit and what's he going to be like on the locker room. So, yeah, I would expect the trade rumors to heat up again as a team starts to fade, maybe that believes they could be competitive and a GM that needs to win now. But I don't see him getting moved in the short term. And if I'm Houston, like I said, I really got to be careful with this situation, how I handle it.
Now, Jordan, let me ask you then about, maybe I'll start a little trade rumor here. Let me ask you about that. We'll go back to last night's game. I'm watching that game, and I know, you know, you said the Warriors aren't the championship contender that they were, so it's a little different look of a team. I actually see a team that I think is going to have a hard time this year. Like, they look, they're very young in some places. I don't think they have, they're not nearly the talent. Like, some people had thought, okay, they're going to come back and they're going to return to championship contender. I actually think that era is in its, you know, they're in their silver years now. Like, they're, you know, they're going to the early bird special. Like, I know they're a young team, but the championship era, you know, that window's pretty much shut. And watching Steph Curry last night, he's 2-for-10 from three. The most enthusiasm I saw out of him was when he gave KD the pregame hug. Like, he just looked around him like, I got to carry this team, and that's a lot. So what would you say to this? The Warriors try to accelerate where they are right now, knowing that Klay's out another year and he's going to be another year older, and Draymond's getting a year older. Steph Curry's got a big contract and he's got a lot of value right now. Do you consider, if you can get a haul of draft picks for him, would you think about moving him?
No. Not even for a second.
Wow.
Come on, Steph, right?
Wow, you just popped my balloon. I had a
No. Because I – okay. So, I don't want to overreact to one night, but they did look bad. I mean, they looked horrible. They couldn't do anything offensively. Defensively, they were hurting.
And Wiggins will drive him
Wiggins
crazy.
Wiggins goes 4-16. Yeah. Oof. You could just see Brooklyn saying, oh, you want to shoot a three? Go ahead.
right.
You know.
Rather than Steph.
And Wiggins played well for them last year. But I think, you know, with Steph at 32, you still have to give it one more shot because he's such a generational player. And, you know, because of him not necessarily relying on super athleticism and being such a skill-oriented player, I think he'll be able to play well into his 30s. And I still believe in Klay coming back. I know the injury, again, is devastating. But if I'm the Warriors, I'm still thinking, you know, I want to give this one more shot. I wouldn't rush with Steph. And I wouldn't sell that. But listen, it's not the craziest idea. Because if you put Steph Curry on the market, you better believe you would get an unbelievable return. But I still, if I'm the Warriors, want to give it another shot.
I mean, that's a player, even at his age and his size, it doesn't matter to me. And I know he's got the injury history as well. I don't care.
So he's bad ankles. Yeah, the ankles.
Yeah, the ankle thing. But, you know, he can get, like, nicked up a little bit here and there. But a guy that can shoot like that has so much value. And he's also, what a great personality. Like, everything that he brings, aside from just being, you know, a great shooter, one of the great shooters in the history of the game. Like, I just think that, like, it could accelerate your cause with a guy like Wiseman who is he 20 yet? I don't even know. He didn't look it.
Barely. But, he's really going to be a good player.
No, you could see it. Yeah, you could see it. And then garbage time is really what you saw most of it. I think he had like 7 straight points in the fourth quarter. The game was already out of hand. But you just kind of got to feel, okay, he could shoot from the outside. He's got a little feel to this game. He can handle the basketball. Like, over time. But his, like, it's not parallel to Curry. You know, his trajectory is just, by the time he's getting it, Steph's going to be done. So it's almost like the roster is a bit incongruent, and they've got to decide, do you just go all in with the rebuild now and get as much assets as you can, or do you just hang on and hope for one more graybeard, you know, run at it before it's over? That's why I asked the question. It's a fair question.
They have to, if it's the latter and they really want to give it another shot, which I do think they do, you know, they have to believe that, you know, last night's Oubre, Wiggins, 7 of 30 wasn't indicative of the rest of the season. Pascal, who they really like, the Villanova kid, you know, didn't really do much either. So I hear what you're saying. The other part about it is the West is so brutal. I mean, it's top to bottom.
That's my point.
Who's been bad in the West? You know, Phoenix, Memphis, Sac, they're all going to be better.
Yep.
So it's going to be very, very tough for them this season. But I do think they'll be competitive. I think they'll be better than they were last night.
I'm curious to see Steph's energy. And if he wants this, you know what I mean? Like, he's going to have to just be out of his mind. Like that Steph Curry, you remember, just running all over the place, running all, like, 5 different screens he's running off of and just dribbling, you know, like Curly Neal. Like, does he have that much energy to give you that this year? Or does he feel like that this is not worth that energy and I need to be careful? That's what I'm going to watch.
And not having Klay impacts that. And then also 100%. Not being a contender impacts that.
Yeah, your like energy, right.
Right. It's LeBron's first year in L.A. where he's saying, you know, I got to conserve. You know, I have a lot of young players around me. This is not the year. So we have to pay attention to it, especially in a shortened season.
No doubt about it. All right, so I'll put you on the spot then and ask you this question then. I've got two players who are considered MVP candidates. One is a two-time MVP, so you know obviously it's Giannis. And the other one is somebody that everybody expects could win it this year, and that's Luka. And I'm looking at both their teams, and I'm wondering which one gets more frustrated with his supporting cast first. Because as you know, what comes with being an MVP or being a guy that everybody considers top five player? It's okay. Can you lead your team to a championship? Now, Giannis, that's getting louder and louder for him. Now, I know everybody loves Jrue Holiday, and the changes that they did make to the roster, has it been enough of an upgrade? I say no, especially the way Brooklyn looks. I don't think that makes them. In fact, I think they actually take a step back only because Brooklyn emerges ahead of them, in my opinion. So does he reach a point where he looks around going, Chris Middleton's nice, but he's not nice enough. There's not enough here like for me to win, and that's going to start bothering him as the criticism will come. Or does Luka look around and go, Porzingis is exactly what I need as a number two, but he's never available. He gets hurt all the time. And when does he say, I need help? Which guy do you think
that's a good one.
Is the first one to, maybe not publicly, but behind the scenes, and you're really good at getting that information. You're great at that. I've heard this, I've heard that. Which guy will you hear first start grumbling to friends? I need more. We're not going to be able to win here, and it's all going to be my fault.
The good news if you're a Dallas and Milwaukee fan is that neither one of those guys, likes to complain.
Publicly.
Dirk was awesome in Dallas, but he complained. He was a complainer. He was a great guy, but Cuban will always say, he complained. With Luka, he's kind of this new age mentality of he's just going to keep grinding. And at his age, he's wise beyond his years. Yeah. With Giannis, I would lean Giannis to answer your question, because Giannis just signs this mega deal that's insane money. And now there's way more pressure on him to win, especially given the issues in the playoffs, last year, particularly. So the fact that Milwaukee goes out and gets Holiday is a big plus. And I thought Bogdanović would have been really helpful. But Milwaukee's lineup, their roster flexibility offensively, it doesn't compare, in my opinion, with what Dallas has, assuming KP is healthy. And I think, bringing in Josh Green, I think that will really help Dallas defensively, because that'll take off a lot of the pressure for Luka to guard twos and threes. Mm-hmm. And I think Dallas, because Luka is still so young and hasn't had – necessarily the pressure to win now, with Dirk's first year, it was about Dirk, or Dirk's last year was about Dirk. And so now I think Milwaukee, if there's any one of those two that's going to feel it more, it'd be Giannis.
I'm telling you, those are two names I'm watching, because like I said, I ask it only because that's what comes with when you start being talked about as a great player. Now it's, can you win? And I'm looking at both those teams. You're right. I agree with you. I do think it's Giannis, although you just signed that thing, so you've got nothing to complain about. Like, you knew what you were getting yourself into. But Luka's the guy, I think, as great as KP is as a number two for him. I mean, what a perfect fit he really is. It's his availability that is the most frustrating thing. And eventually that would get to me. Because I'd be out there just getting my head kicked in, and I'd be looking at him in his skinny jeans and his street clothes going, bro, you ever getting out here? Because I can't do this by myself.
I know.
And he just seems to be on the bench a lot. That's the big question.
He is. And that's a concern internally with Dallas. They want to believe that KP's that guy, the number two, but he has to be on the floor. But don't you think, and I know we got to go, but don't you think that with Giannis, he would never admit this publicly, Alan, but don't you think he's got to feel internally, this has to be at least a finals appearance season. And if things go awry, let's say they limp off to a 7-5 starter, they end up going 10-8 to begin the season. Doesn't it feel as if he's going to feel all of that pressure, as opposed to Luka, where if they don't get off to a great start, it's not as if it's here we go again.
Right. I think you're right, and I do think that'll be interesting to see how he handles the criticism, because I do think that's coming. Now that he signed that big contract, all the rose petals that are thrown at his feet over the last couple of years, now we're going to start saying, wait, you make a quarter of $1 billion. You know, and you can't make a jump shot outside of 10 feet. That's what you're going to start getting at. You can't get your team to the conference final. Yeah, you're going to, I'm telling you, that stuff's going to start nitpicking at him. And then you wonder how thin is his skin now that everybody's not just fawning over him and his story and how great he's become. Because, okay, you've now got, and I love this phrase, I steal it from Jerry Maguire all the time, you've got the Quan. You've got the Quan now. The only thing missing is the championship, and can you do it? So I it's a lot of great stories for this season, though, Jordan. It's always fun to talk basketball.
Can I give you one more thought?
Go ahead. Love it.
If Luka and Dallas, it's like they're still dating, and everything's great, and nothing annoys you about one another. Giannis and Milwaukee, they're now married.
Yeah.
And you start to feel, okay, you know, I don't really like that thing he does.
They're home like from the honeymoon.
Not making right. Yeah, exactly.
So home from the honeymoon, going to, now they're back to work, and now the routine starts to begin. And then, right, it's the toothpaste left on the vanity. It's all that stuff that now starts to happen. You can tell we've both been through it. My man, hey, have a great holiday. Have a great new year. And once we move on to the show on the bigger stage, obviously you're going to be a big part of it. So thanks, my brother.
Thank you, Alan. Be good.
Don't miss Bart Scott and Alan Hahn. Weekdays at 11 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN.